Hang up in 5 seconds from now. Hello, Bill Diamond, and all the rest of you who have had a part in the Volunteer Iowa Farm Labor Project. I'm grateful to be given a few minutes on this important program, even though I must speak to you from across an ocean. And I'm glad WHO is again helping sponsor this important program. From our experience last year, I know something about the planning and work involved in conducting a project such as this. So first of all, let me commend those of you undertaking this extra load. I know it takes a lot of effort and no end of teamwork. And I also realize, of course, it takes workers, girls, boys, men and women, folks willing to do something extra to make the 1945 labor program a success. So here's to them, whether they're WHO prize winners or not. They, after all, are the ones on whom the real success of the project depends. And from what little information we have here, the food problem in the States is becoming critical, too. Perhaps you wonder about the farm help situation here. Frankly, it's serious. Wherever I've been, France, Germany, Belgium, Holland, England, and elsewhere, there are not enough regular farm workers to carry the load, which after 5 years of war, is heavier than most people realize. There are so many millions of hungry people and so many crops put in late. Moreover, some of the land has been left unusable due to flooding, minefields, and the like. Many farmsteads have been damaged and countless fields have deep ruts left by tanks and trucks. That means, of course, the land that's left must be worked to the fullest extent. In short, the food challenge here is perhaps the greatest in European history. Peasants and farmers are trying to meet it. But even if the season is exceptionally favorable, farmlands and herds can't possibly produce enough this year or next to adequately feed Europe's people. Holland, France, and Germany, along with Italy and Greece, appear to be in greatest need, Holland especially. So many displaced persons, Dutch, Belgians, French, Russians, many now returning from forced labor, will not get back in time to be of much help on frame this year. In Germany, where people lived off occupied countries to some extent during the war, things may be very different this winter. Unless something unforeseen develops, the German people may also find out what it's like to be hungry. Permits for farm workers to get back on the land have been issued all spring by the military government. And now, Allied officials are releasing some Nazi prisoners to produce food. Everywhere in Europe, we see countless women and children in fields and around the herds. Many townsmen also are helping take places of men and boys in service or taken away. All farm people here seem to work long hours, and they have few modern tools. Their responsibility, like yours, is great. Nothing is more important than to help produce food for a hungry world, and in our case, for our soldiers, sailors, and Marines endeavoring to restore order on this war-weary globe. This is Herb Plambeck returning you to WHO. All right, that's three away and one to go. We'll be coming up in 10 seconds from now with our last spot. 5 seconds from now with the last spot from here in Paris. Hello, Mel Nelson, and hello, WHO. This is your war correspondent with one more report on some of the men I've talked to on this side of the Atlantic, men seen in many different places. In Belgium, there are lots of our men, and we've already reported meeting some of them. But at the largest army food depot in the ETO, near Charleroi, I came across Sergeant Raymond Pingle of Cedar Falls, whose wife and daughter live there, and who was principal of the Hudson High School before joining Uncle Sam. Pingle is a clerk at the food supply yards, and after seeing 3 trainloads of food loaded up for our armies that evening, he and I agreed this was the best place of all to see how Iowa farms are providing our men with their chow needs. Pingle also told me of Private First Class Garland Brooks of Clear Lake, Private First Class Van Hauser of Cedar Rapids, and Sergeant Virgil Behonick of Livermore, all working at the depot and doing a fine job, as is Sergeant Garrett Cass of Orange City, whom I also met there. In Holland, where Canadian and British troops brought the Nazis to their knees, I saw very, very few of our GIs. In fact, just one on the whole trip. But interestingly enough, he was an Iowan. I met him on a little Dutch ferry crossing the Holland Diep, a body of water that figured prominently in the war. He is Sergeant J.C. Burdick, whose folks are at Farragut. Burdick has been in service over 4 years, and at the time I first saw him was with a party checking on a location for a headquarters unit to be set up in Holland. Later, I also ran into him in The Hague, proving this is a small world after all. The next reference may sound unusual, but I've even met Iowans at weddings. However, now that June and its brides are here, even that may not be too surprising. Anyway, in a little French town at a wedding of a young New York lieutenant and the army nurse he met in Ireland 3 years ago, one of those assisting with the arrangements was Lieutenant Vernon Paulson of Crystal Lake, Iowa, a close friend of the groom. Paulson and the groom had been fellow prisoners of war for 27 months, but that's over now, and when I saw them, the blushing bride, along with the mayor who was to perform the ceremony and who couldn't speak a word of English, and the problem of wading through 10 or 12 army and other papers was claiming their full attention. That same day, while talking with several others recently liberated from Nazi camps, I had another pleasant surprise. One of the boys came up to me and said, "Mr. Plambeck, do you remember me?" I had to confess I didn't exactly, though his face was familiar. "Well," he said, "a lot has happened since I saw you 4 years ago, but I used to be your paper boy, and I wish you'd say hello to my folks and to your sweet wife." He was Lieutenant Vince Hamrahan, one of the best carrier boys we ever had, whose folks live on 40th Street in Des Moines, and whose bomber went down in the Switzerland area. He assured me he is okay, and I assured him I would deliver both messages just as soon as I could. At Le Havre, France, on the docks at a ship, was radar man third class Robert Hall of Woodbine, where his folks live. Bob has seen many places, but none looks as good to him as Woodbine. Also on the ship was master machinist Gus Brown of Sioux City, whose wife and three sons are waiting for him there. "Sure wish I could be back with Charlie and Gussie and Tony and their mom right now," is the way he put it. Also at the docks was Seaman First Class Bernard Simpson, who's on a Liberty ship and whose father farms near Lathrop, Missouri. And with a unit of boys just returning from Germany, I saw Private First Class Lowell Todd, whose wife lives in Des Moines, and Private First Class Harlan Brewer of Dubuque, and PFC Walter Collins, whose wife and mother are at Fort Dodge. While here, of course, I've seen a lot of boys, but there are many others I couldn't get to, though I tried. Among them, a cousin, Private First Class Elmer Hines of Davenport, with the First Army, always a little out of my reach. His folks will be glad to know, though, I had a message from him just today, from near Limburg, Germany, where he and his buddies are enjoying the luxury of a house, lights, bath, and radio. They're all fine, and like every other GI, counting the days until they get that visit home, that visit that's been promised them. I hope to see still more of our men in another place, but for here, this just about winds things up for now. This is Herb Plambeck returning you to WHO.
C-O-M-C, please start telegraph.
Hello, NBC New York.
Could we have a report on that, please?
Received all okay and signal good.
Okay, thank you very much. Did you get that message on Chapman's 2100 chair?
Righto.
Okay, fine. Just a moment, please.